This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Almost 94% of Granite Staters have high-speed internet access or broadband, but expanding that service to the remaining 6% has been a slow-speed challenge. Certain pockets of the state have really struggled. For example, almost a third of Coos County residents don't have broadband, along with about 30% in Cheshire County. One main reason is cost. It's expensive for companies to install high-speed service to every last corner of a rural state. But while firms want to recoup that investment, residents of those areas resent paying higher prices. How to wire that last mile is our topic today in The Exchange, and let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. We have three guests. Joining us by phone is Scott Valcourt. He's Director of Strategic Technology at UNH and Principal Investigator of Network New Hampshire Now. And Scott, good to have you. Thank you for your time.
Oh, thanks, Laura. It's great to be here.
Also with us, Carol Miller, Director of Broadband and Technology for the New Hampshire Division of Economic Development. That's a state agency. And Carol, welcome.
Thanks for the opportunity.
And also with us, Ellen Scarponi, Senior Director of Economic Development at Fairpoint Communications. She's based in New Hampshire. And Ellen, really nice to see you. Thank you.
It is a pleasure to be here, Laura.
So, Ellen, let's just get a couple definitions out of the way. And one of them is what we're talking about, high-speed internet. What does that mean in layperson terms?
I am so glad that we're going to have this hour to tell people exactly what that means. Broadband, technically, is having what you need to do what you need to do when you need to do it. It is not a definition that comes from the FCC. It is not the same definition from provider to provider, technology to technology. It means that you, as a person who turns on your computer, needs enough internet speeds to do what you need to do. I'm delighted to be able to say, not only on behalf of Fairpoint, but beyond, all of the providers in New Hampshire, that we have stepped up to the plate. The figures that you told us about just a minute ago have improved dramatically, even in the last 2 years, and we'll be going into that. But I'm delighted to tell you that no matter where you live, what you need to do, or where you need to do it, we have service available for all but 2% now, only 2%. And we'll be able to discuss today the opportunities for getting to those 2%. So to your question about what does it mean, MPBS, you hear it all the time. It means megabits per second. But it is a measurement that is different from a landline-based company such as Fairpoint to a wireless company such as AT&T or Verizon. It's different from cable. But what it means when you hear the MPBS and you hear two different speeds, one is indicating the download speed, and what that means to you is how much do I need to get my Netflix movies streaming on my computer.
Let's get down to
reality.
Let's
get down to it. And the FCC has actually put out a chart of what you need to do that. They say you need 4 megabits per second in order to download a stream, a high definition movie.
So that doesn't sound like a lot.
It doesn't sound like a lot. What you have to do when you're calculating what the need is for your specific application is how many people are in your household using the internet? How many devices are using the internet? What applications? I mentioned that there's a download speed. There's an upload speed. In residential services, usually it's a disparate number. Usually it's 10.1 or 25.2 or 3.1.
Upload versus download.
Upload versus download. Most of us, for our residential applications, are going download. We are doing emails. We are doing movies. Upload is when you are mostly businesses who are uploading things into the cloud.
Or if you have a little home eBay business or something like
that,
you may want to put pictures up of what you're trying
to sell. So what has happened over the last 8 years, but especially over the last 2 years with so many providers, is we are saying to people who are in a residence, what do you need for speed to do your residential applications? But if you work from home, maybe you need a different type of service.
You
are running a business from home, and we have those available.
So here's the question, and I want to bring the other guests in as well. But so you said, Ellen, it's basically high-speed internet is partly what you need where you're at. Doesn't the federal government have a standard of 25 megabits per second?
That's a great question. They have said over the last 3 years that the definition of broadband has changed from 1.5 to over 768 to 3.1 to 6.1.
Again, that's that ratio of
download upload. To 25.3. Interestingly, 25.3 is not an incremental service that most providers offer. It's 25.2. So in the report that you saw and the numbers that UNH uses, and they're the only ones that were available from the FCC, they had to put together a map that said which areas of the state get 25.3. And so that's why you have those 30% numbers that you were talking about.
So do you feel like 25 is way too high a standard?
It is not at all. It is a great target. And there are people who need even more. But the reality is, if you look at what people are buying, even if they have 25 available, they're buying 7, 10, 15, 20. They're not buying the maximum. So that says to us they're buying what they need to do the job that they need to do. And the issue that – and we came out – we offered to UNH when they did this report, please also put in figures that show where there is 6 meg of service and above. And that closed the gap dramatically for people in COAS, in Keene, throughout the state. And one thing I want to say to you is that the price is the same. If you buy your service in Colebrook, New Hampshire, Keene, New Hampshire, Manchester, or Nashua, for DSL service, it is the same service, the same price for the same service.
Well, there's so much to unpack here. First of all, like what we're talking about, and then how much it costs and so forth. And I guess, Scott, I'll go to you next. So how do you define high-speed internet? There's this federal standard, but then there's the standard that Ellen is talking about, which is, you know, what people need based on what they are trying to do.
Yeah, Laura, I'm an engineer, so I like to look towards what are the exact definitions that are undisputed. That is exactly what people are going to build equipment against, exactly what are we going to measure against, because it's really hard to measure something that is changing. And absolutely, the definition of broadband through the FCC, as Ellen described, it's been changing almost annually for the last several years. And so that definition of what is broadband doesn't really serve us as a good technical term. What we have to have is something that's more specific to say, this is the measurable numbers in which we can go against to say, this is what broadband is versus what something else might be. And so if we take that measurement, and that's what we did in our state broadband initiative project, and then subsequent projects that have come funded through other federal agencies, we're looking at the state and trying to figure out where does broadband exist, where does it not exist, and what is that level that is achievable or available in that area, because there is this other zone. We often talk about the served and the unserved. And so the 94% is the served, and there's the 6% that are unserved. But there's really this other piece that shows up in various places called the underserved. And as Ellen described, it's those people who want to do something with broadband but might not be able to get what they need. And the greatest example was early on in this project, probably about 5 or 6 years ago, we were talking with one of our local New Hampshire town chiefs of police. And by day, he's a chief of police, and by night, he's a real estate agent. And the only broadband available to him was satellite broadband. And when his children got home at 3 o'clock in the afternoon from school, if they decided to download games or play things online, when he got back from work at 5:30 to do his second job of uploading images for his real estate business, his children usually used up all the available bandwidth that he was allowed in that 24-hour window, because that's the way satellite broadband works. It's a little different than, say, terrestrial landline or wireless technology. And so he was underserved. He had broadband, but he didn't really have it all the time that he needed it. And that's another gray area that we even don't necessarily classify in some of our examinations, because it's kind of there, but it's not kind of there. And that's where we need to really understand is, how do we get to the places where broadband just isn't there? And that's a hard problem.
Sure. And everybody's situation is different, as you describe and as Ellen describes. So, Scott, what about the 25 standard, the federal standard? I mean, do you think that's the number that we should be looking at, or is it more flexible than that? You say that it keeps changing. So where should we settle on?
I think that it will continue to change, because there'll be new applications and new tools that will say we need to use broadband in a different way and do more things. For instance, video conferencing. Say a decade ago, when broadband was just getting started, absolutely unheard of to do video conferencing from home. Today, you can use Skype, you can use a whole host of other applications with a camera and speakers on your computer tied into your broadband connection, and you can do a video conference. But you have to have the bandwidth necessary, that upstream, downstream amount that would allow the same amount of traffic to go out the door from your house as it is coming in order to make the images and the audio work just correctly in your video conference. I once did a video conference in the last year with a colleague in Maine who really lived in a very rural area. But when he was on the video conference, he could hear us just fine, so his downstream link was great. But the video image that he was sending from his video conferencing software back to the rest of us looked like he was winking, because it caught him mid-blink, because it only could send one image of the video at a time.
Well, and Scott, and the example that you gave of the police officer who had to upload images for his part-time real estate job, you know, I think that's illustrative. Carol, give us an example also of what digital tasks I can do here in Concord. You know, it's a big city for New Hampshire, so the access is good. What can I do here in Concord that somebody in Coos County might not be able to do?
Well, I think generally if you have broadband, I don't think there is much of a difference of what you can do. What the difference is the available options, the competition.
I see.
Which competition delivers innovation. So if there's less competition, there really is no real push for innovation. And people, I think, in Concord adopt internet at a bigger level than people in Coos County. There's still training issues going on with adoption, just basic people getting computers to get online. I mean, those are some of the barriers to adoption in our rural areas. But for the most part, I am a resident of Coos County, so I'm very familiar with the North Country, came from the business to the state about 9 years ago. I was in the business, the ISP business, so I understand the landscape up there, and it has changed tremendously. People seem to think that Coos County doesn't have broadband, and that isn't true. And truthfully, it's very counterproductive to attracting business and economic opportunity if you're saying that there's no broadband in Coos County. That simply isn't true. Our major centers have competitive options. When you start to get into the boondocks, the hollows or the very rural areas, you might not have the competition, or you might have to utilize a satellite service, which we don't really track at this point with regards to it. But there is broadband in the North Country, and it really is an individual decision to utilize it in many ways.
So who has it and who doesn't? You seem to be saying that, Carol, that everybody has it, if they choose, they just may end up paying more or having service that isn't quite as good.
That's correct. I mean, you know, households have it. Well, for example, I'm a resident of Gorham, New Hampshire, and I live in a new development. The new developments tend to take a little bit longer to connect. But we were finally able to get major capacity into the neighborhood. And, you know, my wood pellet boiler emails me when there's a problem to empty the ash bin. I mean, there's so many uses for the internet today, you know, the Internet of Things. The market is exploding. So the uses and the adoption of internet is skyrocketing.
So where do you see the need in the state?
Well, the pockets that need to be served. And truthfully, down the road, everybody wants fiber to the premise. And some areas are set up better than others to be able to do that type of thing. But people, you know, again, getting back to Ellen's point about people, and yourself as well, will turn on the computer, and as long as the computer connects to the internet and you do what you need to do, there really is no issue. It's hard for them to embrace gigabit speeds. I mean, what do you need gigabit speeds for? Everybody wants it, but truthfully, do you really need it is another issue. But that's where the industry is going. And I think, again, it's a personal decision based on the cost and what's available as to what a person will have.
Again, the exchange phone number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Today in the exchange, broadband internet access. Most people agree it's essential for businesses and schools, used widely by households as well. We're looking at the infrastructure situation here in New Hampshire and some of the challenges with connecting people in certain pockets of the state. You can join us with your questions and comments, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. So just to make sure I got this right, Ellen, so Carol's telling us pretty much everybody has access, but sometimes you may end up paying more than you want to. So how do you figure out how to set prices for different parts of the state?
Well, what Carol was talking about, to be clear, is that different technologies have different prices, not that the prices for the same technology are different in different parts of the state. That's very important. I want to go back just 1 minute, Laura, to the speed issue. You mentioned that the FCC has gone to 25 meg. The providers have kept pace with the changing requirements at the FCC or the changing definition at the FCC. Fairpoint alone has invested $360 million and deployed 7,000 miles of fiber in New Hampshire. So we feel that we are getting to that, you know, with other providers included, to that 98%. It's those last 2%. Let me explain technologies, at least where Fairpoint goes. Our broadband is deployed. The residential broadband is deployed from our switching equipment, which are those brick buildings you see in your community. There is a distance limitation on our services. When Fairpoint was bought the Verizon assets, the top speed for DSL was 3 megabits per second. It is now 25 on copper, the DSL. But that wasn't good enough for Fairpoint. We said, okay, that means that only the people nearest to those brick offices will get the service. What happened now is we deployed what we call remote terminals. We went further and deeper into each of our territories so that those remote terminals, which are connected, now start that concentric circle all over again.
Well, and maybe after a break, you all can explain to me more about the bricks and mortar of this, because I think that's something that would be worth talking about. And we've got somebody who emailed who is not that far from Concord but says she has some difficulties. So we'll talk about that in just a moment. You can join us too. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477.
Whether you're looking for a good read or want to learn how to write one, NHPR's podcasts have got you covered.
I was hoping you could talk a little bit about those moments and how you saw them fitting into the book?
Well, I don't think it's
possible. Do you edit as you're going along, or do you tend to write it all out and then go back and edit at the end?
At the very beginning, when I started.
Subscribe to The Bookshelf, 10-Minute Writer's Workshop, and all NHPR's podcasts on iTunes and Google Play.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, broadband, high-speed internet. Who has it, who doesn't, and why? Give us a call, The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Carol Miller is here, Director of Broadband and Technology for the New Hampshire Division of Economic Development. That's a state agency. Ellen Scarponi is with us, Senior Director of Economic Development at Fairpoint Communications. And on the phone, Scott Valcourt, Director of Strategic Technology at UNH, Principal Investigator of Network New Hampshire Now. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Here's an email from Anne in Canterbury, all of you. She says, 15 miles from Concord, no broadband available on my road. Fairpoint DSL download speed is okay for surfing or limited streaming for one person, but upload speed is not sufficient for working from home, which I do. Anne says the same applies to satellite, and they shut you down if you use too much. Yikes, Anne. And then she says Verizon MiFi, which is a personal Wi-Fi. Verizon MiFi is barely sufficient, but very expensive. And thank you so much. I'm so glad she emailed, not only to talk about her own situation, but also, Scott, just to help us explain all the different stuff that is out there. DSL, you know, MiFi, satellite, broadband. I mean, just in super layperson terms, Scott, can you just sort that out for us?
Sure. There's all kinds of different technologies that classify as broadband that fit in that space. And so certainly the digital subscriber line, or DSL, which is what DSL stands for, is the utilization of existing copper twisted pair on the pole that has been there for, you know, 100 years. And it's when DSL came out as a new technology, it was breakthrough technology in being able to increase the capability of delivering more digital communication signal across the land than what we had available to us prior to that. So that's one technology. There's coaxial cable, which is typically the kind of thing that you would see from a cable provider.
So Comcast, for example.
So Comcast or Spectrum or somebody would be a provider in New Hampshire in that example. And so the coaxial cable is really nothing more than a big wire that runs through a neighborhood and everybody taps into it. And depending on how many people are on that tap are going to be either that signal is great and wonderful at, say, in the middle of the day and at night when everybody's trying to stream their downloads all on Friday night and Saturday night, everybody might be having to share that bandwidth a little bit in order to use it. Another technology is fiber and fiber optic cabling. Before the break, I think Carol Miller made mention that everybody, the panacea that everybody wants is fiber.
So what's the holdup on that? I have heard that that is what everybody wants. I've also read, Scott, that, you know, some countries in Asia, like Japan and South Korea and lots of European countries, have this already. They pay less for better service.
Well, certainly here in the United States, we have a huge copper plant that already has twisted pair out there in the field. And the cable providers have slowly been investing, and if you look at the maps in New Hampshire over the years, you would see that they started in Massachusetts and worked their way up into the towns along the border, and then the towns next door, and then the towns north, and started moving their way into the state. But to run fiber everywhere basically is on top of everything that's already there. And so the question would be, is it make sense to put it on top or in the place of all the existing copper that's already in spots, and also the expense that goes with it. And there is an expense of fiber. It's a cable. There's a cost to that, and there's a labor cost to install it, just as there would be a labor cost to install a copper connection anywhere in the state. But it boils down to what ultimately is going to be the utilization of that cable. And so fiber today, and I think Alan would probably provide that as an example, that there is fiber in the copper plant that likely goes in between the central offices, those brick buildings she talked about before the break. It's already got fiber in there, and it's the same thing that the cable providers, they often have fiber to get from one location to another, and then they deliver the coax plant across the neighborhood. So that's another technology solution that's out there. And then, of course, there's the wireless technology, the Verizons and the AT&Ts and the
T-Mobile. The MiFi or the
Wi-Fi. Yeah, the MiFi, Wi-Fi, whatever that happens to be.
Well, and I have to say, Carol, I'm kind of struck by Ann's email. I mean, it's 2017. She doesn't live that far out of Concord. I mean, Canterbury is just the next town up. And she's got all these options that she's trying to cobble together, and she's having a hard time making it work. I am really kind of stunned by that.
Well, I have to say, commend her, because she has checked out her options. I mean, there are just pockets outside of an available technology that don't serve the need. And she's also working from home. So one of her options might be to pursue a business connection. A lot of times people at home will try to do work over a residential connection, and it just won't cut it.
But then it costs more, doesn't it?
It does cost more. Affordability, of course, but it's part of the cost of doing business. If you're working from home and enjoying that opportunity, there is a cost to it. So you have to be willing to pursue that. I find that most people spend less on broadband in a month than I spend going out to dinner once a month, once a week with my husband, you know.
Well, and Anne, I'm glad you emailed. And here's a similar email. And Ellen, I'll throw this one to you. This is Amy in Gilsum. She says, we live in Gilsum. We have Fairpoint Communication. We often have slow internet after 6 p.m. during the week and almost no access after 8 p.m. Amy says, we are the underserved and unable to do what we need to do. My husband works in the medical community and needs access 24/7. So this is a huge issue for us. When can we expect improvement in our area? So here's somebody else, again, you know, just needs it, doesn't live, my goodness, you know, out in the total hinterlands. And she's having a hard time, just like Anne. I just wonder what you think.
Well, that's a very, very good question that just came in. Because there may be, in this situation, a repair issue, not a bandwidth or service issue or capability issue. This comes up all the time.
Really?
Where people, for lack of a better term, DSL, because they say that it slows down or it is non-existent after a certain time.
Unreliable.
That is not a capability of DSL. Digital subscriber loop line, as Scott said, is a direct line to your premise. Cable is a shared service. So that would make sense that after 3 p.m. when kids get home from school, that their service may degrade. However, on a DSL line, that's not the case. What might be happening is multiple applications are starting in this person's home. Now, that's not a repair issue. A repair is if that person is paying for 7 meg to their door and they're not getting 7 meg to their door. What happens inside their house is basically up to them. If they have their wood pellet stove, as Carol said, telling them when to refill, if they have their refrigerator on it, their alarm system, their TV, that all takes bandwidth. So what may be happening in that scenario is all of those things are coming on during the hours that she's experiencing these problems. What I would offer in both cases is a lot of people don't know how much Fairpoint has improved the DSL speeds. In Canterbury specifically, and I happen to live in Canterbury also, so I know firsthand, the service has been upgraded to 25 meg in many, many areas. So I invite Anne to look at that. I invite your caller from Gilsum to look at the possibility of higher speeds. Are they available? Call us. We'll be able to tell you right away. And or getting a second line. That is an option as well that people don't think of. But if you have kids in your house, get them their own line so that they're not intruding on your DSL or your bandwidth.
I'm still, again, maybe I'm naive because I live here in town. I'm not sure. But I'm still, again, struck by this idea that it's almost like the hot water. You know, you can't all take showers at once. I mean, I guess most people have the expectation that, you know, they're working from home, their spouse is working from home, one or two kids may be doing something, and everybody should be able to do it. It seems very old-fashioned to say, well, if so-and-so is watching a movie, then, you know, you can't look at your email. Well, that just seems like so 15 years ago.
Yeah, well, technology has improved dramatically. As I said, 2 years ago, 3 years ago in some communities, the highest speed that somebody could get was 3 meg. Now, that was sufficient at the time because people weren't doing as many things as they are doing today.
Skyping, Netflix.
Skyping, Netflix, as I said. But the investments have enabled the equipment to be upgraded so that you can have these higher speeds. I mean, Fairpoint quotes a 25 meg. Comcast will tell you it's 50, 100 meg. But more and more people want to do more and more things, but they have to be willing to pay for it.
I would just add to that that statistics say that if you have a family of four, that each person needs 2 megabits per second because you've got somebody on an iPad, you've got somebody, you know, doing Netflix, you've got somebody on the computer. So a family of four easily could burn up 8 megabits per second.
Okay, so how much does that cost, though?
Well, I mean, you can try to fit it into the Fairpoint plans or your cable plan. Cable technically or historically has offered higher speeds and has for quite some time, but it does cost money. I mean, if you're not willing to cover the cost, and again, you can't get the bandwidth without paying the additional cost. So I would say it's all within reason. You know, for a cable connection, you might pay $50 to $60 a month for a 16 meg or 50 meg or whatever they're offering. And Fairpoint has a staggered rate schedule as well.
Staggered rate. Okay. So what does that mean real quick? And then I want to go back to our listeners.
It means that for the different speeds, there are different prices.
I see. Okay.
So to Ann's point, and Carol addressed it also, we need to make sure that if people are working from home or they have a home business, that they are calling to ask about the services that are available to accommodate them, that have the download and upload speeds that are the same so that the video conferencing does not freeze, as Scott had mentioned. We have two customers in the south of the state who work for a high-tech company. They thought they could only get DSL. They now have their carrier Ethernet service, and they can get gigabit speeds.
Let's go to our listeners, all of you. Again, the exchange number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Thank you for those emails. You can send us an email as well, exchange@nhpr.org. And Kathy's in Sugar Hill. Hi, Kathy. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say that and echo your previous callers. I live in Sugar Hill, and we've had internet in different ways over the years. We've tried having a dish that didn't work well. We don't get cable where I am, so we have it through Fairpoint. But our usual speed of download is 4 megabytes, and so if we want to watch a movie, we need to turn off internet on our phones and on our computers. So we also have this either-or problem. And, you know, I've called Fairpoint repeatedly to say, you know, what's going on here on their tech line, and no one has offered me any different choices as far as what I could purchase to improve my service.
So would you be willing, Kathy, to buy another line and, you know, spend a little bit more money for that access?
Well, I don't know what another line would give me. We don't have children at home. We don't have a refrigerator or a wood stove connected to our internet. We basically have the basic phone line, and we each have our computers and our phone. I mean, I echo your call, your thought of this is so 15 years ago. You know, we can do either or. We can't do both.
Well, Kathy, thank you for the call. And just to add on to her, we have Rebecca in Sugar Hill who emailed, who says, I was a two-term state rep and dissatisfaction with internet service is one of the most common issues I heard from constituents. Yes, most people had access to service in my district, but it is extremely unreliable. Connections dropped all the time and not fast enough for video conferencing, even at the highest available speed. Rebecca says, I also run a small business and experience these problems at least weekly, usually often more. So in answer to Fairpoint's measure, does it do what you need to do? The answer is too frequently, no. Rebecca goes on to say access to reliable, truly high-speed internet is not an amenity. It's a necessity, especially in rural areas where people telecommute and where we must offer good internet service to attract new people and businesses. Now, Ellen, I definitely want you to jump in on that. But Scott, to you, First, you know, our guests here in studio have been saying, look, if people are having problems, they can pay for more access, more service. So is that part of the problem, Scott, is that people want it, but they don't want to pay for it?
Well, I think it's twofold. I mean, there's the aspect of the more you consume, the more likely that you would need to consider as an expense, just the same way that if you buy more wood pellets to burn in your wood stove to keep it hotter in the house, you're likely going to pay a little bit more because you're buying more wood pellets. But there's another piece to this, and it's, you know, how do we expand and reach to those places where there needs to be additional access.
Right, and clearly there needs to be, based on what we're hearing from people.
Yeah, we've got this. Every single county has pockets where there could be better connectivity, and there's all kinds of opportunity, both federal funds in FCC, USAC, which are all the taxes we pay on all of our phone bills go into that pool, and New Hampshire only gets a small amount back. There's rural development funding through the U.S. Department of Agriculture. There are funds available from the Department of Commerce. And with the administration change and some of their emphasis on investment in infrastructure, maybe this is an opportunity where there's a chance for private business to work together with public agencies in order to fill the gap, to take care of that remaining 6% that is not covered in New Hampshire and provide a much better opportunity for everybody in the state. Because it is like water and sewer and electricity. Everybody needs broadband, and there's things you can't do other than through broadband today that used to be paper and other mechanical methods that we've just not gone that way anymore. And
sure,
we have a whole group of community that's missing that.
So, Scott, what's the solution then? I mean, better access to some of this federal funding that is out there? I mean, $25 million in the Federal Connect America Fund. I've heard about that. I mean, what's it going to take to sort of move this ball forward?
Well, Ellen mentioned it in the previous segment where, you know, when Fairpoint took over the Verizon landlines that were in the state, Fairpoint put in a huge amount of investment into the New Hampshire plant to make it be the next generation, to be at Fairpoint's level of one of the capabilities and possibilities that should be out there to deliver. It's a process. It takes time. And so, yeah, if we look back 10 years from then to now, we've gone a whole long way in terms of being able to deliver broadband to a great many people in the state. But we're not totally there yet. And you know, if you look at the curves in all the engineering texts, you know, it's that last tail at the very end. As we get to the 6, 4, 2, and 1% left, they're the hardest ones to reach.
Well, and it seems like, yeah, go ahead,
that's
Scott.
What we need to try to do.
And it seems like, again, what we're hearing from people, Ellen, is not so much that they don't have access at all, but that their access isn't great. So I did want to give you a chance also to respond to what Rebecca in Sugar Hill said, that, you know, this is not an amenity, it's a necessity, and we just need to get it done.
And to Scott's point, he was eloquent in explaining that this is a process and that there are more and more investments being made by more and more providers to get higher speeds deployed further into the communities. There are solutions for people, again, who want to work at home, who want to do businesses from home, who want higher speeds. DSL in particular is a distance-sensitive service. So that means that those people in those circles, those concentric circles that I mentioned earlier, can get the higher speeds. But as you go further and further out in a town, then, and it doesn't mean just in the rural parts of our community, it means in Canterbury, even, you have less service.
You end up paying more for it. I got to cut you off there, but we will finish it up after break, I promise.
Whether you're looking for a good read or want to learn how to write one, NHPR's podcasts have got you covered.
I was hoping you could talk a little bit about those moments and how you saw them fitting into the book.
Well, I don't think it's...
Do you edit as you're going along, or do you tend to write it all out and then go back and edit at the end?
At the very beginning, when I started...
Subscribe to The Bookshelf, 10-Minute Writer's Workshop, and all NHPR's podcasts on iTunes and Google Play.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at high-speed internet access in New Hampshire. who has it, where the pockets of people are who don't, who is served well, who is underserved, and why. Again, give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. One more time, the number, 1-800-892-6477. And Ellen Scarponi with Fairpoint, I did just want to give you a chance, I had to cut you off going into the break there, a chance to respond to Rebecca's email just saying, look, access to high-speed internet is not an amenity. It's a necessity, especially where people want to telecommute. And she says it's reliable, truly high-speed internet, because as we've heard, sometimes people have it but doesn't work out so well. So go ahead. I wanted to give you a chance to finish.
Well, we were saying during the break, and I want to say on air to your listeners, that this is the process, and the people that we should be talking about are those who aren't getting service, and how do we get them some service. The Connect America Fund that you mentioned, Fairpoint did take advantage of that by basically committing to the federal government that we will provide 10-1 service to 13,000 additional rural, high-cost users, end users, within it's now within another 4 years, I think. It was a six-year program. So we're taking advantage of every opportunity that we can to work with these partnerships and grants and what have you. We are also working with communities because for the first time, we are able to discern exactly who doesn't have service. In the past, all of the studies have been what service is available. Now, I personally have visited over 20 communities in this state over this past year to talk to them about what where the pockets are and what their alternatives are. You know, we will give them quotes. If you in Sugar Hill want better service, go to your selectmen and tell them that you want to get quotes from providers about what it would cost to expand. We were instrumental in creating legislation to enable towns to create special assessment districts so that if you have 10 people 5 miles out of town at the top of a hill who want better service, but they can't afford to pay for the upfront cost, their town can actually bond, spread it over 10 years, only encumber those people with the cost so the rest of the town isn't paying for those 10 people, but those 10 people get the higher speed internet. We are doing private-public partnerships with towns as well. So talk to your selectmen.
So go ahead, because there are a lot of options, but it's very confusing for folks to wade through it.
Right. First of all, I'd say money does solve everything. And,
unless you don't have money.
Unless
case,
you don't
it
have money.
Solve it. Right.
And I would say a lot of the work I do at the state level is I work with Ellen a lot and all the providers. I get what we call the cranky customer calls that don't particularly know the options available. And I urge anyone to call my office and talk with me, and I will help them understand what the challenges or options for additional service would be. I'm an independent party, unbiased, and I do help a lot of people figure out what they can do about improving their service. But I will, playing off of Ellen's point, a lot of the communities today need strong leadership at the town level. Most of the town officials are those areas that lack the quality of service or service entirely. Oftentimes, will not get involved in the process, so it becomes an individual quest for better broadband. I've worked with a lot of communities. I've done a lot of shows with Ellen where we've gone about talking about the available services in town, and leadership at the town level is shocked. They have no idea. So if leadership at the town level has no idea of what options for broadband exist in their community, you can imagine that a resident would not have an idea.
Well, and everybody's busy, and it's hard to research it all, and sometimes you can't get somebody, on the phone to explain it to you and so forth.
But the point is, you need to call. You need to talk to the right people. And if you're not talking to the right people, give me a call at my office, email me, and I'm happy to wade through. And oftentimes, the news I have isn't the best, but it's been checked out and vetted. And the other thing concerning that is the landscape is constantly changing. So there are upgrades and improvements that are done that people have no idea that they've taken place. So I can vet that for folks and help them to understand what they need to do.
So, Scott, talking about, you know, going to your town or having your town work with you to get a better rate and negotiate, there's been some activity in the legislature this year in terms of, you know, municipal bonding for high-speed internet. There was a bill that went down earlier this month. Can you just highlight for us what you would like to see in terms of townspeople and the people that represent them in the town getting together and working on this? Because, again, we're hearing a lot of unhappiness from people who don't think their access is adequate.
Carol described it well. It really is a local issue. And one of the things that we discovered when we went through our state broadband initiative and we're talking to people across the state about broadband was it started at the community level. Where is it? Where is it not? What could be done? And what are some of the barriers that are out there? And so there are a number of barriers that we put forth in our final report that sort of were the kinds of big rocks, so to speak, you could knock out of the way if you looked at it from a state level and would make it easier for communities to be able to go forward and do something as a unified group, as an effort to make something new happen in their community. And you know, Ellen described working with communities, and that's exactly what one of the recommendations that we had was having a community group come together with the providers that are serving their community and say, here's where we are, here's where we'd like to be, how do we get there? What are the things we can do by working together? And that's, I say it all the time these days, especially all the years I've been working in networking, it's not technology networking, it's people networking. Mm-hmm. How we get people to talk to each other and work together to solve the hard problems. Because this is a problem we can solve. We just got to work together to do it.
Joining us now on the phone is Brian Shepherd. We haven't talked that much about schools, and I did want to cover that because that's another important piece of this. Brian is responsible for statewide research and education. He's director of broadband services for UNH. And Brian, we really appreciate you taking time out. Thank you.
Well, thank you for inviting me to join your program.
So how is the internet access for some of New Hampshire's rural school districts? What more do they need?
Well, we've been doing a lot of data collection over the past year. We actually created an initiative to find out the current state of our K-12 connectivity and then work on initiatives to better that. And what we found out was somewhat sobering. We found that fiber, you've heard over and over again from Ellen, Scott, Carol, and the callers that broadband is a necessity, and clearly it's a necessity for our schools. So they have access to the 21st century tools. But we've got 70% of our schools that have fiber connectivity, but that means 30% don't, and we need to work on that. Sort of a byproduct of when we were trying to assess who had fiber, who didn't have fiber, was that we found that the broadband cost for those schools was varying wildly across the state. And if you take even just one region of the state in one locale, you'll have somebody paying $1,000 a month or $1,700 a month for the same 100 megabit service. Or put a different way, you can buy 500 meg or 150 meg for the same $2,000 a month. So, and we're finding that's true statewide. We all expected to find pockets around the state, but we were amazed to find that it's really a statewide issue.
So 30% of schools don't have high-speed internet access? Is that what you're saying, Brian?
No, they have high-speed internet access, and many of them have the access they need for broadband to meet today's FCC standards. But the standard is that by 2018, you'll need about a megabit per second per student connectivity in schools to stay up with the STEM initiatives.
Wow, that's a lot.
It is, and fiber is really the only way you're going to support that sustainable growth.
Okay, so just to clarify again, fiber is sort of the next level up from broadband?
No, but fiber is sort of the ideal way to deliver broadband.
I see.
So you were talking, you know, earlier, Ellen and Scott and Carol were talking about DSL and satellite and cable, and all of those have various tiers of broadband they can deliver. I don't think anybody would disagree that fiber is the panacea way to get broadband to any entity.
So here we are at town meeting and school district meeting time, Brian, and people are looking at school budgets right now. I'm guessing if schools want to keep up with these technology demands, they're going to have to shell out more money.
They are, although there are some programs available right now to help with that. As Scott was talking about some of the grant programs, the Connect America Fund, there's a federal program called E-Rate, which somebody alluded to earlier. And all of us pay a tax on our communications bills. It goes to the FCC, to the USAC program, and they send it back to the states as a discount off of their telecommunication bills based on the free and reduced lunch program. So what we're finding in New Hampshire is that we only get back about 40 cents on the dollar that we send out of the state. So last year we sent $7 million of New Hampshire money out of state. We only brought back $3 million. This program actually has a three-year program now for building fiber to the schools, and they've changed the legislation. They modernized it in 2014 to say they reduced the, or removed the cap on how much they'd pay to connect fiber to a school, and they are going to give an additional 10% discount. So, for instance, if you were in a school district that was an 80% reimbursement from the federal government on our USF money.
Which is pretty good, right? That's a lot of help.
That's a lot of help. This makes it even better. If you want to build fiber to your school and the state is willing to put up 10% of the cost of that, the feds will put another 10% to it. So, for instance, Ashland is one of the schools in the state that doesn't have fiber. They're an 80% school district. And if the state would appropriate the funds to do 10% match, 100% of that cost would be covered then. So our New Hampshire School Connectivity Initiative is working to try and get that money appropriated by the state right now.
So hopefully that comes through and it won't be quite such a hit for schools to have to pay for those increasing demands. Again, I'm really struck by what is down the road. We're talking about the needs not being met today, but it seems like there's a lot more just around the corner, Brian.
Well, and again, it goes back to the discussion earlier that, you know, what was broadband 4 years ago wasn't good 2 years later or this year, and it'll continue to grow because everything we do is utilizing the internet and interconnecting with each other.
Well, Brian, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Can I add a point to Brian? I work with Brian all the time on many things, but there is that special window of opportunity right now. And what I wanted to focus my comment is before in the capital budget process, the Department of Education has stepped up to create a state fund to match that federal fund. And if they're, you know, we need to support that. So it could go many ways. So
speaking of budget processes,
right,
at the
exactly.
state level, you're if talking
about. If we
can't
create that statewide fund, then they can't get that additional 10%.
I see. So you have to show the investment at the state level.
Talk to your legislators and tell them to support that.
Again, that was Brian Shepherd, Director of Broadband Services for UNH, responsible for the statewide Research and Education Network. And here's an email from David, folks, that I want to share with you. And this came in actually last month while that legislation regarding municipal bonding for high-speed internet was still on the table. Daniel. Daniel says, the state continually talks about the need to retain young workers and families. High-speed internet accessibility would be good for small businesses and the young workforce. This is akin to rural electrification of the 1930s. When rural areas were able to access electricity, they became consumers of things like refrigerators and washing machines. Small businesses were bound to come from this new access. The same is true today of the internet. Daniel says the internet is arguably as important as electricity. Practically every business and home needs it. Daniel, thank you for the email. And here's the question for me that comes out of this. And I think I'll turn to you first, Scott. Should broadband, high-speed internet access, be treated more like a public utility with, you know, set by the Public Utilities Commission, just like our electric rates are?
Well, government intervening into making certain things happen isn't necessarily always the most successful way. You look at what's happened over free enterprise. Heck, even DSL was probably the great example of a technology that was born out of research that then moved into commercial space that is now delivering something that didn't exist, you know, 15 years ago. So on the one hand, I think that maybe looking towards regulation isn't necessarily the best way to do this. However, I do think that there would be opportunity, and this goes back to my comment about getting people to talk to each other, is forming some, you know, interest group or some kind of leadership at the statewide level that allows us all to come together in order to drive forward initiatives that will get us broadband in places where it doesn't exist today. You look at the states around us, Maine, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, they all have some kind of, whether it's called a broadband authority or whether it's some sort of, you know, broadband leadership or some kind of telecommunications activity. It's not their Public Utilities Commission, but it is a separate authority that has the ability to bring forward funds, to issue funds, to invest in certain areas, and basically to work through things. California is a great example of that. The California Initiative Fund, I think is what it's called. They have a program where they have funding available in the state that's provided to them through the legislature, and they look at what are the right investments to be made to expand in areas of technology that would benefit as many of the citizens of the state as they possibly could get.
So a little more oversight or looking at or awareness. Real quick, Ellen, I want to give you the last word on this. Should Fairpoint be treated like Eversource, you know, an electricity provider?
I want to make it very clear that there is one way to get electricity at one time, and that is over wires. There is no competition in that market for the transmission of service. Deregulation of telecommunications and deregulation of internet has provided the basis for the competition and all of these new developments that have come up. Had we not had that competition, had providers been regulated, you would not see the level of service that has been deployed in the last 8 years, the last 3 years, the last year. So I want to leave you with the fact that we have a few people who don't have service. Let's work together to
all
get
right.
them service.
You got the last word in there. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.